thank you so much to our worship team. I mentioned earlier, it is Father's Day, so non-fathers in the room, how about a big round of applause and appreciation for our fathers that are in the room. We love you guys. We were joking as a team, you know, on Mother's Day, we always see a little bump in attendance because moms, you just have more sway about you. So when you say, when the kids are like, what do you want for Mother's Day? You're like, come to church. And you're like, okay. Fathers, not so much. I don't know. It's just different for us dudes. You know, I'm Father's Day, I just have a sensitivity to it. I grew up without a dad from age five on, and it was just my mom. And I am the product, if you will, of a lot of blood, sweat, and tears from other men in my life that just mentored me and supported me and kept me out of trouble and gave me opportunities that I would not have otherwise had. And so, you know, I know with things like Mother's Day and Father's Day, there can be a sensitivity to it depending on what our earthly experience has been with a mom or a dad or maybe the lack thereof. And so I just kind of let you into that part of my soul to say, I'm with you, those of you that maybe Father's Day is marked by something other than good memories or fond memories or whatever that may be. God in his providence and in his sovereignty places us in the families that he so chooses, and praise be to God for other people that came along my life, and maybe some of you would be the same. I had a big brother through Big Brother, Big Sisters. You guys have heard me talk about him before. I was just texting with him yesterday. He lives in Wisconsin, and just texting him yesterday, and he's, you know, this is many years ago now, just the influence that he had in my life was profound. So fathers, we have gifts for you on the way out. I'll explain more of that as you're leaving, and food for all of you, because let's face it, you're not cooking on Father's Day, and dads don't want to grill in this 70 degree weather that we have going on. So yeah, we'll take care of that for you. A couple of just kind of things to just remind you of. You've heard us talk a lot about Baptism Sunday. It is upon us next Sunday. We are certainly happy to those of you that are anybody who's still interested in taking that step. We have several that are planning to do it, really powerful stories, several that are still praying and wrestling with that. And so I'd love to make myself available this week if you're interested. We had someone come up after service and said, I'm ready. And so it's happening next Sunday. If you've not been here for Baptism Sunday, I really encourage you to be here. It's just a gigantic celebration of what God is doing in the lives of so many people, young, old, middle age. It's just incredible to see. And so that's happening next Sunday. And then something that you're maybe hearing for the first time, unless you follow us on social media, is on July 6th, we're doing something called Serve Sunday. You're going to see an image there on the screen. So what you're experiencing right now will not be happening that Sunday. We will not have a morning gathering as you're accustomed to. Instead, what we're inviting you to do is to come. If you want to eat, you can come at 7:30. From 7:30 to 8, we're going to provide breakfast. And then from 8 to 10, we're just going to knock some projects out. We're a portable church, if you didn't figure that out by now, which means that our stuff just gets beat up, it gets dirty, it gets disorganized, it gets all those things over the course of the year. And when we talk about starting a new year, we, because the community that we're in is so centered around the school district, we tend to follow their schedule. So the new school year for us does not start when the weather changes. It starts July like 20th, basically, or somewhere around there. So we want to just take all of our stuff and just get it ready and pristine and clean and organized for the coming school year. In addition to that, we have reached out to Cienega, who's obviously our host school, and said, hey, we'd love to help partner with you to make sure that you're ready for the school year as well. So if you have any projects that we can assist with, we want to come alongside of you and do that. Now, if it wasn't summer, we would have more people here than what we do today. But on a normal Sunday, we have anywhere from 250 to 400 people that are coming and going in this space. Here's what we're looking for. We're just looking for 50 people. That's it. If we get more than that, we'll be ecstatic, but we just want 50 people to come and to be a part of Serve Sunday. We think with 50 people, we can get a lot accomplished as we head into the new year. So we're going to tell you about it every day or every Sunday between now and then for two reasons. One, we need your help. We want your partnership. But two, when you show up at 10 for church and we're all leaving sweaty and gross, It's going to be a little awkward. We'll make the most of it. We'll get through it. But some of you, no matter how many times we tell you you're going to come for church at 10 o'clock, it is not happening that Sunday. And I think I have time to tell you the story. But the way this came about is about this time last year, the AC was being replaced in this building. And so they said, hey, there's no AC. And we're like, we're probably not going to meet then. And so it actually ended up giving us a week to kind of catch up on some maintenance, if you will. And then going into this year, we're like, hey, remember last year when we had that extra Sunday? That was so nice. And so we're like, let's do it. Serve Sunday is happening July 6th. For those of you that are traditionalists and you're like, I have to go to church, I can recommend some other good ones in the area, but it will not be us that Sunday. But we're really hopeful. There's an RSVP on our website. Go there, RSVP. We'll have projects that are kid-friendly, so bring your whole family. Come early, eat breakfast. It's going to be, I think, a really good and fun Sunday together. Okay, that's enough of those kind of housekeeping things. Last Sunday, we kicked off a new series entitled Seasonal Psalms. You see there on the screen, that's what seasons look like if you're unsure. I think we're in the season of ridiculously hot is what we're in right now in Arizona. If you're trying to put words to the misery that you feel, it's called ridiculously hot. But I shared last week that my hope in this series is that as we explore just four different types of Psalms, because between Baptism Sunday and Serve Sunday, we have a limited number of Sundays that we're going to be kind of in this series. But my hope is that as we explore these four different types of Psalms, that we'll have our hearts and our minds expanded to see that regardless of what season of life I find myself in today, God has spoken to that in some form or fashion, and regardless of the condition of my soul, God has spoken to that. And I shared with you last week the way this series came to be was just my own increasing awareness that life is seasonal. And what you think and what you feel and what you're experiencing today, like, buckle up, because it'll probably look different a year from now or 10 years from now or 5 years from now. Life is seasonal. It's just the reality of life. And so the collection of Psalms that we find in the Bible, which is 150 different Psalms, as I mentioned last week using that Keller quote, it kind of serves as a metaphorical medicine cabinet for your soul. So no matter what ails me, I can go to the medicine cabinet of the Psalms and pull out a cure for my soul. Now, I'm really intentional about the language I'm using, because what I'm not saying is that I can pull out a cure necessarily that's going to cure my circumstances. Whatever's going on that's contributed to the condition of my soul, will your circumstances change or improve? I don't know. I sure hope so. We all hope so. But hopefully, at least, the truth that we find in the Psalms or in the Bible will bring healing and comfort to our soul, regardless of the circumstances that we are walking through. That's the hope of this series, right? And we kicked it off last week with Psalm 24, which is a psalm of praise. And we just kind of closed, this is just by way of reminder, we closed by asking, what are the symptoms of the soul when I might reach into the medicine cabinet, the metaphorical psalm medicine cabinet, and pull out a psalm of praise? Like, what's the condition of my soul when I go for a psalm of praise? And we said it was maybe one of two things: a heart that's swollen with pride. We need to look on something bigger than ourselves. We need to look on God, who is the creator and the sustainer of the world, right? He laid the foundations. If you were here last week, we read that together. He laid the foundations of the world. They're under his control. And so when my heart is swollen with pride, when I become the primary player in the game of life, I need to look on something bigger, being God. So that was symptom number one. And then the second one is when our heart is feeling defeated. Look to God, who's experienced and has claimed the victory already. So that brings us to week two today of our series. And I want us to consider Psalm 62, which we would describe as a psalm of trust, a psalm of trust. But before we read it, let's consider this question together. Just kind of rhetorical question, although I do want you to think about it. Who or what do I trust? Who or what do I trust? This is not a spiritual question per se. You don't have to be deep about this. Like, who or what do I trust? So who do I trust? Maybe it's a spouse. Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's a parent or a coach or a mentor or a counselor. Like, who in my life people-wise, who is it that I trust? The second half of that, what do I trust? What have I placed my trust in? Your answer may be something like my financial savings or my investments or my skills and talents or my health or my house or some of those things in our life that just seem to be really consistent. What is it that I have placed my trust in? And as we reflect on these things, in and of themselves, none of them are inherently bad things to put our trust in. So for example, if you answer the question, who do I trust in? And your answer is my husband or my wife or my dad or my mom, inherently not a bad thing. None of us would be like, oh, no, you can't trust mom. You never know about mom. So in and of themselves, not bad things. After all, you can't go through life distrusting everyone and everything. You just won't get through life. So they're not necessarily bad things to put our trust in, are they? So what's the problem? The problem is that they are trustworthy until they're not. And sometimes that trust is broken intentionally, and more often than not, that trust is broken by life and the ever-changing circumstances of life. There's trust in the relationship until it's broken. There's trust in the investment until the financial crash. There's trust in our health until the doctor says, hey, we need you to come into our office so we can talk about your test results. And so everything is trustworthy until it's not. This is definitely not the pessimistic side or the optimistic side of Rob coming out. This is more the pessimistic side of Rob. But everything is trustworthy, and appropriately so, until it's not. And I say all of that not to make us fearful, and not to make us distrusting, and not to make us pessimistic and paranoid, but rather just to be real. Because, and this is coming, I'm putting on my pastoral hat, who sat across from a lot of people over the years, most of life's biggest disappointments and hardships are found on the other side of being let down by someone or something that we had put our trust in. That's usually where the greatest heartache happens. And so what Psalm 62 does, which is what we're going to consider together, is it intends to redirect our trust to God alone, or dare we say, first. If you can trust people, that's a bonus. If you can trust your investments, that's a bonus. But at minimum, regardless of our lot in life, if you will, married, unmarried, rich, poor, it does not matter. We all can be invited into trusting the absolute most trustworthy thing, which is God himself. And that's what Psalm 62 is intending to do, is to redirect our trust to God alone. And so we're going to read it together, and then we'll kind of consider a few things about it. Psalm 62, I am at rest in God alone. This is Psalm of David. My salvation comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I will never be shaken. How long will you threaten a man? Will all of you attack as if he were a leaning wall or a tottering fence? They only plan to bring him down from his high position. They take pleasure in lying. They bless with their mouths, but they curse inwardly. Rest in God alone, my soul, for my hope comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I will not be shaken. My salvation and glory depend on God, my strong rock. My refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your hearts before him. God is our refuge. Common people are only a vapor. We're talking about all of you at the moment. Common people are only a vapor. Important people, an illusion. Together on a scale, they weigh less than a vapor. Place no trust in oppression or false hope in robbery. If wealth increases, don't set your heart on it. God has spoken once. I've heard this twice. Strength belongs to God, and faithful love belongs to you, Lord, for you repay each according to his works. James Boyce, who was a great theologian, has since died, writing about this particular psalm, asked the rhetorical question, do you ever feel like an endangered species? When we are discouraged, depressed, or threatened, we sometimes feel like we too are an endangered species. King David did. That's what Psalm 62 is all about. So that's the likely context from which we get this psalm. David, King David, is surrounded by enemies, and they're doing everything they can to take him out. And this psalm is that we get is his singular declaration of trust in God. And before we check out to say, oh yeah, no one's physically threatening my life. I get it. That's good. You should be grateful for that. But there's still something here for us. And it breaks into three parts. Let's consider them kind of in three sections. The first is in verses 1-4. Trust in God brings peace in chaos. Trust in God brings peace in chaos. Let's read it again. These are the first four verses. I'm at rest in God alone. My salvation comes from him. He alone is my rock, my salvation, my stronghold. I will never be shaken. How long will you threaten a man? This is the chaos that he's writing about. Will all of you attack as if you were a leaning wall or a tottering fence? They only plan to bring him down from his high position. They take pleasure in lying. They bless with their mouths, but they curse inwardly. And so in these first four verses, David is writing about this supernatural composure he experiences in the most chaotic of circumstances. Right? If you follow professional sports, one of the things that you'll often hear them talk about is that those who are really the best at their sport or their skill or their craft or whatever, just having an elite ability to be totally composed under pressure. There's all these surveys that go out like, hey, if you have to have one golfer to make a 6-foot putt to win the Masters, who is it that you want? You're thinking about the person who's the most mentally composed, right? If you have to make 2 free throws to win the championship, who is it that you want at the line? Like, who is the most composed under pressure? And so David is writing about this supernatural composure that he experiences in the most chaotic of circumstances. And certainly in his case, the most threatening times. It's speculated, for those of you that like this little Bible, the extra, if you will, it's speculated that David is writing in the context of a guy named Absalom and his rebellion towards him. But either way, the point is that there's some contingency of people, some group of people that are counseling together how they're going to take him down from his role as king and eventually to assassinate him, if you will. They're spreading falsehoods about him. They're using flattery towards him. Meanwhile, they turn around and speak poorly of him. And certainly, as I said a moment ago, my hope would be that we would never experience someone plotting to kill us. Prayerfully. Excuse me. But if you ever find yourself in any sort of leadership position in any context, however big or small it may be, you can be certain that you will come under attack. Criticized, slandered, lied about. When I want to have a really bad day, I just think about all the people that have done that to me. It's a long list. And so it's in this context that David finds this solace in God alone. The imagery is that of God being a rock or a stronghold. Immovable is the point that he's trying to make, that God is immovable, a rock. And a key word to draw our attention to is the word rest, which is in verse 1. By the way, I'm using the CSB translation, if you're wondering. The word rest in verse 1. I don't know about you, but when chaos ensues, rest is often the last thing that I experience. How about you? We toss and turn all night, right? We're just an anxious, hot mess. It feels fleeting. And yet David says, this is the outcome when you have made God your sole source of trust, because even though everything is on fire around you, God is immovable. God is the rock. Some translations use the expression, my soul waits in silence for God only. Maybe yours does. Imagine having such a deep trust in God. And this, you want to talk about lifetime goals. Imagine having such a deep trust in God that you could say, I'm trusting God to see me through this season that I'm in, even though everything be on fire around me. I'm trusting that God is safe and that he has seen me through this season. The word salvation that David uses here carries a meaning of deliverance. God has delivered me, right? Has and will deliver me from my enemies. He's thinking specifically about the physical enemies that he's facing. However, and again, some of the psalm perhaps seems unrelatable. You're inclined to think, I've never had this same experience that David is writing about. Perhaps that's true. Hopefully it is. But if you think of the word salvation in the context that we often, most often think of it, which is that God has saved us through faith in Christ, saving us from the threat and the power of sin, and giving us instead new life, taking us from darkness to light, then certainly we can find refuge and safety in him from less threatening trials that we encounter. And there's a great scripture in the New Testament that kind of makes this point. It's Romans chapter 8. It says this, what then are we to say about these things? And if you're asking what are these things, there's a list of them, right? Like tribulation or war or famine or disease or pestilence. And I mean, it's all there. And hello, 2025, we're seeing it. What then are we to say about these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He did not even spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he not also with him grant us everything? Here's the translation. If God can spare us from the eternal punishment of sin, he can surely protect us from these lesser evils and trials that we're in. And so that word salvation, this picture of deliverance becomes so important. It has to be your true north where your gaze is fixed and locked. Because if you begin to look around and see, yeah, it turns out everything is on fire around me, you begin to question really quickly. And so I think there's a beautiful parallel to what we experience today, salvation in Christ. Listen, if God can deliver us from the power and the eternal consequences of sin, surely he can deliver us from these lesser things around us. If, as David reminds us in these opening verses of the psalm, we make God our refuge, trusting in him only for our salvation. By the way, fun fact for you here, the word only or alone, those two words, occurs, I think, 5 times in the first 8 verses of this psalm. So there's an unmistakable emphasis on God being the sole source of trust. Trusting God brings peace in chaos. Trusting God brings peace in chaos. And then you move to the middle of the psalm. This is verses 5-8. Here's what I want us to see. Trusting God is a daily decision. Daily decision. Verses 5-8. Rest in God alone, my soul. For my hope comes from him. He alone is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I will not be shaken. My salvation and glory depend on God, my strong rock. My refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times. That's the key part. You people, pour out your hearts before him, for God is our refuge. Now, these four verses seem somewhat repetitive to what we just read, if you're paying attention, right? That's because they are. There's some repetition here, and it's intentional. It's as though David is talking to himself, reminding himself of these truths that he knows to be true about God, but feels threatened every time there's a new challenge. So I may know something to be true, and then the next time I bump into the same challenge or a different challenge, all of a sudden I find myself back in a place of doubt and insecurity. Am I really the right person for this? Is this really the right relationship for me? Is this really the right path you have me on? Like when we feel threatened, we go back to that place of doubt and we go back to that place of insecurity. And so it's as though David is talking to himself and reminding himself of these truths that he knows to be true, but they feel threatened every time there's a new challenge that comes his way. Psalms 42 and 43, if you were to read them, you would find something similar where the psalmist is sort of talking to themselves, like asking themselves almost rhetorical questions that they know the answer to, but they're just infusing it into their heart and mind. And Martin Lloyd-Jones, who wrote a book on the Psalms and who was commenting on Psalm 42 and 43, he said this, "Have you realized that most of your unhappiness," is a great quote, "have you realized that most of your unhappiness in life is due to the fact that you are listening to yourself instead of talking to yourself?" Right. I sense it in the room. Like, yes, he wrote that quote about me. And then he goes on to say, "Just going along with the thoughts that come to you in the morning, which bring back all of the problems of yesterday." Isn't that so true? You've got to take yourself in hand, preach to yourself and question yourself. And then you exhort yourself to hope in God. How often? Daily. Because you wake up with the problems that ailed you yesterday. He goes on to say this, "And then you must go on to remind yourself of God, who God is and what God is and what God has done and what God has pledged himself to do. Then having done that," now you can go get your morning coffee. No, he doesn't say that. "Then having done that, end on this great note. Defy yourself, defy other people, and defy the devil and the whole world." Imagine if you started your day that way. Make your coffee first, if that helps. And just to say, whatever lies I believed yesterday, I'm not gonna believe today. Because my hope and my trust is in God, right? That's really exactly what David was doing here in Psalm 62. He's reminding himself with description after description of who God is. It's my rock, my refuge, my fortress. So all that, I will not be moved. I will not be shaken. And interestingly, the word my, the pronoun my, is found 9 times in verses 5-7. So what does it tell us? It tells us that clearly David knows God deeply and knows God personally, because the circumstances of his life at that moment were threatening everything that he knew to be true. And so he's just going back to what he's certain of. So we get this my, over and over again. There's this unquestionable, deep connection between David and God. And oh, how important it is, because the circumstances of life will make us vulnerable to forget and question God's safety often, if not daily. I was just preparing the rest of the reflection questions for the month of June. By the way, AI doesn't write those. Preston and I take turns writing those. So if you love them, we wrote them. If you don't, AI wrote them. Anyhow, I was just preparing the rest of June, and you're not quite there yet, but if you're still reading along in our minute-by-minute Bible reading plan, you're going to come into a section focused around the Israelites and the time that they spent wandering in the desert on their way to the promised land. And as I was reading it, ahead of reading it with all of you and just kind of preparing, I was struck by, there's a, pay attention to a common theme that you're going to see. And that is the Israelites forget God's faithfulness and then they fall back into a spirit of despair. And it happens over and over and over again. And so you'll read things like, for example, where they're in the wilderness and they're complaining and they say, like, take us back to Egypt, for example. We would rather die as slaves under Pharaoh than to be out here in this quite literally God-forsaken land. Like, take us back. We would rather die as slaves under Pharaoh. Take us back to Egypt. And then God provides. They whine long enough and hard enough, and God rains manna from heaven, brings water forth from the rock, and then they chill out, and then the cycle plays itself over again, again and again and again. Here's what I will say to us. It is a fight to go to that place of deep trust in God regularly, if not daily. You have to remind yourself. You have to talk to yourself, not listen to yourself. You have to talk to yourself, reminding yourself of God's prior protection and provision for you. For you. I think one of the gifts that living as a family who's impacted by disability has given to us is the ability and also the necessity of keeping short accounts of hardship. Because if you live in that place, you are done. And so, no, it didn't start out this way for us, but just daily life for us necessitates that we move on from whatever yesterday's hardship was. We have to. We'll be having a particularly difficult day, and maybe it's me that's in a bad place that day mentally, or maybe it's Kendra that's in a bad headspace that day, and we'll just sort of have this moment. I can just recall hundreds of times where this has happened in our home, where we just kind of have this moment and be like, hey, we're going to get through this. Why? Because we did the last time. Because God provided. And though the sky was falling, it didn't crush us. And though it feels like the sky is falling once again, it will not crush us. Like, you have to go back to that place of God's faithfulness and preach it to your own soul. Don't listen to yourself. Talk to yourself. But let's not pretend like it's not a challenge, right? And that it doesn't require a lot of intentionality. It does daily, moment by moment, day by day, week by week. There's a well-known verse in the book of Lamentations. It's in chapter 3. I like to call it a coffee cup verse because you might see it printed on the side of a coffee cup. But we often leave off the part that's just before the coffee cup portion. Let me show you what I mean. This is Lamentations chapter 3. Remember my affliction and my homelessness, the wormwood and the poison. Translation, is in a bad spot. I continually remember them and have become depressed. Yet, this is where it shifts. This is the coffee cup part. Yet I call this to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's faithful love, we do not perish, for his mercies never end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. I say the Lord is my portion, therefore I will put my hope in him. So what was the response to this continual state of depression that the writer was experiencing? Calling these things to mind. Calling these things to mind. I've shared with you before, one of the instructions, if you will, in the Old Testament to the nation of Israel was whenever they're in a place where God had provided, where they were to stack stones of remembrance. And so then when they look on, it would be like, this is where God provided. And years ago, I did an exercise when I was still doing student ministry and leading students. We did an exercise where we went and found a bunch of stones and we wrote on them things that the Lord had provided for us. And I still have one of those stones that sits in my office. And you have to go back to that place of remembrance often, because the fires that rage around you, they may be short, they may be long, whatever it may be, will incline your heart to be distrusting, discouraged, etc. And so what was the response to this continual state of weariness, calling these things to mind? I love in verse 8 of Psalm 62, it says, trust in him at all times. I mean, in my opinion, every word in the Bible is intentional. So all times means? All times. All right, for the 50 of us here, we're going, we got this. Not just once, not just sometimes, all the time. Pour out your hearts before him. Translation, go to that place every day of total and deep dependence on God. There are so many things in the world that you have absolutely no control over. Turn on the news if you're unsure. One thing you are in total control over, and that I'm in total control over, is disciplining my mind to go to that place of deep dependence on God every day, moment by moment. God, in you only do I find refuge. You are my stronghold. I will not be shaken. 1 Peter chapter 5, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all of your cares on him, because he cares about you. Picture that. The God who controls the cosmos and who created and gives life to, I don't know what the world's population is, over 7 billion, right, at this point. That same God cares about you, cares about you. Trusting God is a daily decision because the threats are daily. You have to combat it with the same frequency that they come at you. And then finally, the last four verses of the psalm, we find this: trusting God protects our hearts from idolatry. Verses 9 to 12. Common people are only a vapor, important people, an illusion. Together on a scale, they weigh less than a vapor. Place no trust in oppression or false hope in robbery. If wealth increases, don't set your heart on it. God has spoken once, and I've heard this twice, meaning this is important. Strength belongs to God, and faithful love belongs to you, Lord, for you repay each according to his works. So here in these final verses, we get a picture of the vanity of trusting in anything other than God. And the theme of the psalm up to this point has been trusting God, trusting God. There's a repetition to it to drive it deep into our souls. It's very intentional. But then David also takes a new strategy, which is to help us to see, like, if you're unsure if God is trustworthy, all you got to do is look at the vanity of all the other things that you're inclined to put your trust in. Look at the vanity of other things we might be inclined to put false hope in. What are they? Three things that I can identify: people, dishonest gain, and wealth. People, dishonest gain, and wealth. Derek Kidner wrote this: the point is not so much that we have nothing to fear from man, as that we have nothing to hope from him. There we go. Again, I said it at the beginning. The point of this is not to make us distrusting of people. Who trust nothing and no one. You will not get through life that way. It's not reasonable to think that you can live that way. That's not the point of this. Rather, it is to not allow those things that we are inclined to trust become primary in our hearts, idols in our hearts. Do I hope personally, do I hope that my family is healthy and stays together for 40 more years of blessing together? Of course I do. But I have absolutely no certainty of that. And so allowing that to become the idol and the anchor of my soul is dangerous. Furthermore, should it not play out that way, my rock and my refuge remain in God. Do I hope that the money that I've saved and invested continues to accumulate so that I can count on it when I hit that perfect age of retirement? Of course I do. Of course I do. I wouldn't be investing in it if that wasn't my goal. But should it not play out that way, my hope and trust remain in God. As much as we probably wish it wasn't true, people are, as Psalm 62 reminds us, people are vapors. Wealth is fleeting. And so when they hold too prominent of a place becoming idols, they make us vulnerable for extreme discouragement and hopelessness. I've been following this for 97.6% of you. You're going to care nothing about what I'm about to say, but here we go. I like to watch professional golf. And in April, a golfer named Rory McIlroy won the Masters. He completed what they call the career Grand Slam. He's won all four majors. And he had won three of those majors for, I don't know, in the first 10 years of his career, and then he had a 10-year gap. He was chasing after the Masters, and it just was elusive. It was every year he's just almost winning. Finally wins it in April. Since then, he's played terrible. He's missed cuts. He doesn't talk to the media. When he does talk to the media, he's just curt and kind of rude. And so I was watching this. See, some of you are already gone. You're like, dude, just move on. Anyhow, last night I was watching this news story on this, and they were speculating, what's wrong with Rory? Like, he just completed this amazing feat that for so many, maybe two decades of his life, he's been chasing after. And as I'm listening to these commentators, I'm like, I know what happened. He got what he thought he would make him happy, and now he has nothing to drive towards. Like, now what? There's nothing greater in golf than to complete the career Grand Slam. You have done it all. I mean, I suppose you could win more. But the thing that he was after for so long and so hard, and if you watched it, I mean, he was on the green in tears. Like, the emotion that came over him in that moment was staggering. And now it's like this miserable skeleton of a person. They're like, what's wrong with Rory? I think what's wrong with him is that things like wealth are fleeting. And these things that we put our trust and hope in, like this, if I can get to this, or if I can put my hands on this, I will be complete. And I think Psalm 62 speaks to that. I mean, wealth is fleeting, success is fleeting. The book that I've mentioned previously, Blessed Are the Spiraling, talks about like those in the tech industry, you know, in parts of California where these industries are big, they think that by like age 32, you've peaked in that career field. Excuse me? Okay, that's really depressing. So the point in saying all that, the point in telling you about a story that you don't even care about, although now you're going to pay attention more, is that these idols of our hearts just have a way of disappointing us. And when we get them in part or in full, we're like, huh, now what? Now what? So when they hold that prominent place and they become idols, they make us vulnerable for extreme discouragement and maybe even hopelessness. And in verses 11 and 12, David is reminding us that God is powerful and that God is loving. Why is that important? It's important because when trials come, Satan will attack on both of these truths. For example, if God is powerful, could he not have prevented said trial in your life? That's the listening to yourself part of it. If God is powerful, could he not have prevented this trial in my life? Am I sure that he's stronger than the threat that comes against me? Therefore, is it true that God actually does love me? I mean, you could see how that just spirals, and that place of deep despair becomes deeper and deeper and deeper as you begin to listen to the narrative in your own head. And in verses 11 and 12, David is reminding us that God is powerful and that God is loving. When trials come, Satan will attack you on both of these truths. If people or stuff become the idol in my heart, the God in my heart, and I allow them to become idols that I place too much trust in, not to say you shouldn't love people, trust people, but if they occupy that space in my soul that's intended to be occupied by God, it will be difficult for me to believe that what is true about God. When Satan attacks me with those lies, I'm much more vulnerable to believe them. I'm much more vulnerable to believe them. So once again, I want to close with the same question we asked last week. The book of Psalms, we've been describing it as a medicine cabinet for the soul. You've heard me say that now several times. We asked this question last week. I'm going to ask it again today. What are the symptoms we are treating with a psalm of trust? So when am I going to the medicine cabinet, book of Psalms, opening it up and saying, I need a psalm of trust? Like, what's the state of my heart, state of my soul? I would answer that by saying it's a heart that feels threatened or afraid. It's a heart that feels threatened or afraid. Note this, threatened or afraid of other people, perhaps, but unlikely. Rather, threatened or afraid that some of the other lesser gods that we have put our trust in might not get us across the finish line. You start to sense it. You can feel it. And fear is provoked. And doubt becomes real because you're like, wait, I needed this investment to go 25 more years. I needed this relationship to look a lot different than it does. I needed this dream business that I started to be more profitable than it is. And so when the heart starts to feel threatened or afraid, and those lesser gods that we have put our trust in might not get us across the finish line, you reach for a psalm of trust. Reorient your heart, reorient your mind to trust in God. Maybe the relationship doesn't heal. Maybe the money runs out. Maybe the business doesn't make it. Maybe the chemo doesn't work. Maybe the church doesn't make it. I mean, I was just talking with another church planter this week. They're inheriting a building. And I was like, okay, you're a jerk, first of all. And second of all, how did that come to be? Another church is closing its doors. Like, sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes the election doesn't go my way. Sometimes the money runs out. Like, it's just life. And Psalm 62 is an incredible picture of a heart and life that is totally resolved to trusting God as the only sure place of refuge. I'd love to consider this last question, and then I promise I'll be done. And that's this: what are some of the things I'm tempted to trust in other than God? And I'm not being unreasonable about this. Like, you shouldn't go home and announce to your husband on Father's Day, nonetheless, that I don't trust you anymore. All right, cook your own chicken. That's probably not. You shouldn't go to your boss and be like, I don't trust you. I want to see the books today. I'm not being unrealistic. I'm talking about when you get alone in your own thoughts, in your own head, and when you're tossing and turning at night. Where's your soul going to say, that will give me deliverance, that will give me safety, that will give me refuge? Because chances are, when your feet hit the floor the next morning, you're going back to whatever problems you had the day before. The question is what will you absorb those problems into in your soul? That's the thing you're tempted to trust in other than God. We all have things. I mean, in my case, I trust our staff. I trust all of our volunteers. In my personal life, I trust the doctors and the therapists that work with our daughter. Like, I have so many people, so many things that I trust. That's what makes us human. But if my soul finds refuge in those things, I'm vulnerable to be extremely disappointed and discouraged at times. We all have things. It's what makes us human. But the time to discover a misplaced trust is before it exposes itself as untrustworthy. The time to discover a misplaced trust is before it exposes itself as untrustworthy. And when our trust is anchored deep in God, then all other things are absorbed in that. I'm not saying they don't hurt. I'm not saying they don't keep us up at night. I'm just simply saying, whether they prove trustworthy or not, when we fall, when those things let us fall, we always fall into the powerful and loving arms of God. Amen? Amen. Let's pray together, and then the band will come and close us. Father, thank you that you are our rock. You are our refuge. I just think of some of the people in the room today, and I'm just mindful of maybe the season that they're in. When things feel shaky, things feel uncertain, things feel difficult. I'm also mindful of people in the room who are just coming through what seems to be just an incredible answer to prayer. And they can look back and see how you walked beside them through so many difficult days, so many difficult moments. And yet, wherever we're at, whatever the season of our soul is today, what is true of all of us is that at some point, if it hasn't happened yet, it will. The idols of our heart that we place too much trust in will get exposed. And when they do, we find ourselves broken, we find ourselves discouraged, we find ourselves disappointed. And so, might it be today, God, it's Father's Day. It'll help us to remember it. It's Father's Day. That we would renew our trust in you. Maybe it's for the first time. Maybe it's not. But on this Father's Day, we say, you are the good and perfect Father. We can trust you. You are our rock. You are our refuge. We will not be shaken. Thank you for your promises to us. Thank you for your grace towards us that we, even though fashioned idols of our heart, that no doubt leave us discouraged and disappointed, you are waiting as the powerful and loving God. May the truth that we speak to ourselves be greater and stronger than the lies that we listen to in our heads today. May we look on you, the great and perfect, loving, powerful God, and say, we are safe in you. You are our rock. You are our refuge. We will not be shaken. Amen.